If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. A lot of things have been happening yesterday. Shiloh Hendricks has been found guilty on one of the counts, not guilty on the other count. It's a case that looks very good for appeal, in my view, but it's a case that illustrates also the downfall of civilization as we have these liberal states who are trying to redefine the concept of victimization. And in doing so, are invading the First Amendment and claiming words away from the First Amendment. That is what is happening. And it's very important to understand, people are saying Minnesota is cooked, bro. Yes. Yes. And understand there will be a process of balkanization in the US in the next 50 years. I've been talking about this process for 10 years of my streaming career. You have to flee. You have to flee these places. They have to be punished by your absence. That's the only way we'll make it true. That's the only way parts of civilization will be maintained. When the liberal governments go after you for being white, you have to leave, and you have to bring your wealth and bring your talents elsewhere. Never forget that you have value, that you have worth. The simple fact that people can live around you and not expect that you're going to break in their car is a high value thing that you have. People don't realize. And eventually we have to make the liberal states realize this. We have to make the liberal states realize, all right, you want to live among yourselves? All right. You want to live in a world where no one will ever call you the N-word in a park as you provoke them into doing so? All right, we can make that world for you. You're going to have your liberal enclave. People are going to know you can't enter these places if you're white. By the way, there's already subsections of liberal states that are literally no-go zones for white people. And they're just extending those. Well, let them extend. Live among yourselves. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how you enjoy life. We're going to just build our own states. And sometimes we're going to have to move. Sometimes we're going to be in a state and we're going to realize 10 years down the line, oh, that wasn't the right one. But we will bring our quality away from you. And by the way, I'll be banning a lot of people tonight here. My first victim already has shown up and volunteered for banning. I will be banning extensively tonight with pleasure. Each ban, each block is just reinvigorating my heart. I love banning people. John Drake says, super states got to break up for any real hope. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be uncertainty about what are the states we need to be headed to. For me, in Canada, it was pretty clear. There's only one state, there's only one province left where the matriarchy hasn't taken over, and it's Alberta. Ironically, Alberta is led by a female premier, but Alberta is still operating as a just society grounded in law. But Minnesota, we're talking about the epicenter of the war between the liberal state and the federal government. This is where you get these terrorist women who want to stop ICE. This is where you get all of these programs like daycares that have been exposed recently, but so many other programs. People don't realize, but Minnesota is running a scam on the federal government at multiple levels. They're diagnosing everyone with autism. They're getting these autism checks from the federal government. It's a scam. They're overdiagnosing. All they are interested in doing is let's create bureaucratic fluff that brings money into this state. And they will attract with this the worst parasites of society. And they will get exactly what they fucking deserve, living among themselves. John Drake says the answer is a 1,000 principalities with different ideals and laws. Yeah, I guess you could present this as the ideal. I agree. Something like this. Now, principality legally might not pass, but we have to do something like this. We have to reach sovereignty. And we have to understand that large cities, yes, Richard Fitz, large cities are the epicenter of these of this drainage. They attract all of these people who want to recompose the law of America and Canada, the constitutional law, and they want to bend it in their favor. We have to abolish the welfare state because else every city is going to become like large cities. They're going to be attractors for people who don't produce anything for society, and they just want to wreck your life. That's all they want to do. Richard, John Drake says, I'll be joining you in Alberta soon enough. Well, it will be good to see you then. It's definitely the place to be in Canada. It's fascinating to me. As I get old, I understand more and more of the world, and I understand that everything is tied. Woman, the state, family courts, incentive programs for grants and for money drainage toward you have autism, we're going to give you money. You have this, we're going to give you money. All of this works together. And when you are in a free society like Alberta, which is the last free place in Canada right now, the last free place where they will let someone like me, not have his family destroyed, you realize that, okay, you know, maybe there's less women. Maybe it's harder to get a woman in Alberta. But the women who are in the city, they're not worth anything. It's like, yeah, you're going to get a girlfriend. If you go to a liberal city, there's extra pussy. You're going to get a girlfriend. But she's gonna get an abortion. She's going to make it hard. If you do have a baby, she's going to kidnap it. And she knows that she will stay in place because she knows she has the family courts on her side. So she's going to take them from you. So you have the illusion of a girlfriend in a liberal city. And you also have the illusion of free speech, the illusion of gun rights. You can't get a gun. You can't bear an arm in a liberal city. You can't. And yet you have a Second Amendment, theoretically, Second Amendment rights. You cannot, as Shiloh has proven it, say the N-word in a liberal city. And yet you have a First Amendment right, theoretically. So I hope that we elevate this to the Supreme Court of the U.S. because the time is ripe. The case is perfect. So it's not like Shiloh then started strangling the guy. It's not like Shiloh then hurt anyone. It's a pure case of free speech. Can we say the N-word in a park when someone is taunting us to say it to him? Now, if you can't have this, the First Amendment doesn't exist. If you can't consensually reply to someone who is taunting you to say something, and the mere fact of saying that thing is made a crime in any area of the U.S., then free speech doesn't exist. Because the free speech actually should be much broader than this. Free speech should be, I can say the words that I want no matter whether you taunt me to say them, no matter whether you're trying to get me into trouble by filming me, by violating my own rights to privacy. That's how broad free speech should be. We're not even there with Shiloh. Sadie Edwards says, Shiloh's braids were on point. Absolutely. Foundering was saying, Shiloh of Troy. Absolute beauty. Shiloh is I think that she understands that she has a role here. She it's more important than Shiloh. And so she got found guilty of not even talking to the child. So the whole event at the supposed initiation of this thing, the fact that she would have used the N-word to talk about a child, there was not even enough proof in the record to make that case. So she has been found not guilty of saying anything about this child. What they did found her guilty of is what she was then on camera to say, as the sexual assaulter with a criminal record pulled his phone and said, "Did you just call this child the N-word? Just say it again. Say it to me. Say it." And she said it, because when you're in front of someone who is taunting you to actually claim one of your American rights, why wouldn't you say it? It's like, okay, you really want me to prove to you that I have a First Amendment right? And so she said it. She said it in a way that's absolutely sensical in that situation. Because what is the person implying when they're filming you and saying, "Say it, you can't say it, you can't, huh?" They're implying my thuggery is overriding your First Amendment rights. They are saying you don't have a First Amendment right. And there is such a thing as, there is a legitimate game theoretic reply to this, which is, no, I'm going to prove you that I have a First Amendment right. It might take me 6 years of my life to get to Supreme Court, but I'm going to prove you that I have it. And that is what Shiloh did. For that basically use of the N-word on a camera, where she wasn't filmed even with her consent, truly being victimized by someone trying to step over her boundaries, trying to say, "You don't have this right," trying to say, "I can ruin your life if you say it." That is what's implied here. Now, how is that not the crime of extortion? How is that not the crime of harassment? How is that not, by the way, the crime of public disturbance? Because if you're going to say that Shiloh disturbed the public by using that word, how is this guy who's on camera using that word before her? How is he not an accessory to the crime or a public disturber of his own? Because he used the word before her. And he used it in a targeted way to abuse her, to disrupt her, to publicly disturb. In fact, if you look at the Minnesota statute that defines what is a public disturbance, it's something that will tend to make others angry. Well, this guy made Shiloh angry, no doubt. No doubt that when you put your camera on someone's face and you say, "You have no right because you're white. Because you're white, you can't say that word. I'm not white, I can say it." That's not a public disturbance. And yet Shiloh is a public disturbance for simply saying, "No, I can." Yes, we can. We'll get into the detail of what has been found and what she has been temporarily punished with, although I do hope that this punishment never occurs and that she does get into appeal. But just to comment before, it appears that the Nick Fuentes interview with Hunter Biden has been released. So it's been coming out as a 1 hour, 30 minutes interview on X. I don't know, is this a leak? Has this been stolen? Or is that the real interview that's being published? I have no clue. But in any case, we get the beautiful interview. I've watched 50 minutes of it for now. I think it's great. I think Nick Fuentes is performing extremely well. Hunter Biden is just trying. He's approaching this with such a boomer angle. This kills me. when younger people than boomers act like boomers. But Hunter Biden, it's exactly the kind of guy that ends up being a boomer no matter what, no matter his age. Because he can't help it. He's brought up by the liberal system. So he tried to make a kind of subtle case of, you know, Nick, I don't think you actually believe what you're saying. I think the problem with you is you're just being cruel. But the kind of humor that he's talking about, you know, cookie jokes and stuff like this, those are jokes that are justified. They are justified cognitively for the youth. They are even a way, they're kind of an endearing move. And Nick Fuentes didn't make a full intellectual case about this because the discussion was in and out and coming. He didn't have a full control of the conversation. But I would say now that right here, as I'm a solo speaker and I'm not interrupted, there is a case to be made that the jokes of Nick Fuentes are actually on point and they come from a place of real love. It's nonsense to be cultivating such trauma for more than 100 years for a population. It's nonsense to abuse your youth by burdening them with deaths that have happened and issues that you take with the German government and its actions of 100 years ago. The idea that you can carry hatred for that long and that you can abuse children with it in modern times, that you can burden them with that bigotry and that hatred against an entire people, white people, which is what Jewish families do a lot. Liberal Jewish families do it a lot. I think that there are some conservative Jews that don't care all that much about it. But liberal Jewish families, they educate their children from very young in their youth into a feeling of hatred and a feeling of rejection of Western society. And it's the jokes of Nick are kind of very on point in terms of it's time to move on. It's time to move on because there are white people that have been killed in history. There's the Holodomor. There, you know, I can pick any genocide or any war in which the outcome wasn't too good for white people, including World War II, by the way. there were absolutely innocent German citizens that just got bombed with napalm, okay? Their life ended in absolute flames. And it wouldn't cross my mind to educate my children in a sort of hatred about whoever I conceive as having napalm bombed Germany. It wouldn't cross my mind to tell a 6 or 10 year old, you have to carry this burden forever that the American government and the English government and everyone who's ever going to stem from these countries will one day napalm bomb you. Because there's a point at which it's irrelevant. There's a point at which the hatred is irrelevant. Because the white people of today are not the people who have committed the Holocaust. And the American government of today is not napalm bombing Germany. And after 100 years, it's time to say, all right, history has some value in terms of recording events and knowing how societies develop and what they do. But it has no value in carrying ongoing hate into new generations that are neither the victim nor the committers of atrocities. And this is what I hope would have been better formulated in the confrontation of Hunter Biden, but unfortunately Hunter Biden made it impossible because he kept interrupting. And so we find ourselves, I wouldn't say that Nick has done a bad case, but he couldn't get as intellectual as this. But Nick has performed extremely well in the exchange, and down the line, it boils down to, at the very beginning, there's an interesting moment where Nick says something like something about race and crime, a fact that anyone would agree with. And Hunter Biden is like, I don't know that. Maybe. On a very, very clear and simple fact of what is currently causing white flight in America, and how, yes, you know, the entire real estate market is just based around self-deception, around down the line, it's all about race. But no one wants to say it's about it, so it becomes about other things. It becomes, there's a nice school in the neighborhood. And so everyone knows that race is a fundamental cause of the modern state of America and modern everyday decision of people in the domain of where they will live, where they like to live, where they don't like to live. And Hunter Biden was in complete denial of this. He was trying to grab onto the technicals of, well, MLK, that's not exactly why people get out of Chicago. But down the line, we all know that's what drives everything in America. We all know. Hunter Biden was trying to paint a picture where, black segregation, you know, these places where it's mostly or almost all black people that live there. He was trying to frame it as, well, it's because they were denied other opportunities. And Nick was coming back with the reality, which is, well, no, it's there's regions that become unlivable. These regions cause white flight. White flight targets places where the regions are still livable, without, you know, high criminality and destruction of property and carjackings. And so you have here a reassortment that constantly heads toward resegregation in America. And the liberal governments are just trying so hard with massive amounts of money that skew the entire economy to just force people together where it's just not rational. You're throwing money at people who ultimately both sides want to live among each other. The whites much more. But down the line, naturally, they both converge toward away from each other. And you can see it when you create these multicultural artificial entities forced by government money. What do you get? The whites in these places end up being mistreated, like Shiloh. And so there's a strong connection between the Nick Fuentes interview with Hunter Biden and what has happened to Shiloh. Because what is Shiloh? Who is Shiloh? She is a beautiful white woman living in a place that has been completely declared a non-white area of the U.S., one of the leading center point of government injection of money into all sorts of skewed programs to prop up diversity and Muslim communities and blacks. But this entire system creates anti-white hatred to the point where you cannot have your First Amendment right protected in a fucking park. So Aaron McIntyre was commenting on this. He says, "We will never have our country again until we reject the civil rights religion. Conservatives can't keep worshiping MLK and falling over themselves to attack racism and expect to maintain freedom of speech. It's time to discard this anti-white ideology entirely." There is an absolute normalization of talking points that we used to be the only one to make. You know, the right-wingers of the early internet, we used to be the only one talking about anti-white ideology. Now you get these mainstream personalities talking about it. So what were the two counts? The jury has reached a verdict in the Shiloh Hendricks trial. Count one was disorderly conduct toward the child, not guilty. Count two, disorderly conduct toward the videographer, the guy who forced himself on her to try to ruin her life. Guilty. That in itself is a weird conclusion. Because here you have the idea that, okay, no crime was committed originally in the head of the jury. I'm trying to place myself in the reasoning of the jury. So they couldn't prove that this videographer had any reason to open up his phone. Because he wasn't there to testify and say that, yes, she said this. The videographer apparently is in Africa and claims to be dead on his GoFundMe, but it's confusing. But anyways, he wasn't there to testify. So really, all this finding is purely based on the video that was left by him, not even on his own testimony. So the videographer would have taken his phone, according to this finding. He would have taken this phone when she had not said anything about the child or to the child. So what happened in this whole series of events? And you can see here, Minnesota is a heavily diverse non-white area. You just have a random picture and you have Muslim people hanging around and you have a Muslim videographer or brown videographer who takes it upon himself to go after Shiloh. So what would have happened is there's this boy who has been claimed in the GoFundMe to be 5 years old when in fact he's 9 years old. This boy is a huge troublemaker. Such a troublemaker that at 9 years old, this is unbelievable, but at 9 years old, he's already on a ankle bracelet. At 9 years old, he's carrying an ankle bracelet around. Ankle bracelets are for extreme cases of flight risk, where like normally, if I hear ankle bracelet, I think someone who truly is into criminality so much that he needs to be constantly traced so that he doesn't escape, so that he can go through his future trials. But at 9 years old, you're already on an ankle bracelet. And it makes no doubt to me that it's due to him engaging in some degree of criminality already at 9 years old. And of course, what did he do that day? Well, he engaged in criminality. He engaged in going through the purse of Shiloh. So Shiloh said something about this, you know. We cannot assume that she said the N-word because that's only the claim of the videographer. And let me tell you, these people sometimes will completely misunderstand your words. Sometimes I'm trying to speak and they just don't understand the accents. They speak another accent and they don't understand ours. So possible that the videographer misheard whatever she said, or possible that she used the N-word. But in any case, she didn't harass anyone with this word. Those were just our observation and our free speech right to say, hey, I'm currently my purse is being looked into by someone without my consent. I'm being the victim of a crime here. So what does the videographer do? Understanding that he lives in Minnesota, that cancel culture is all powerful, that you can ruin a white person's life by just exposing their speech. He overplayed his hand in many ways. Not by the standard of the jury finding, but I think that by the standard of what will be found as the truth in the end. And when you look at how much Shiloh has been making in Give, Send, Go funds, when you look at the possibility of an appeal, I think down the line, this may be the end of anti-white cancel culture. Now, it's a bold claim, and I don't think we're there, but I think we can dream. We can dream here, and we can dream solidly that this will be recorded as you don't do this anymore, because we're gonna turn your places to ruins. We're not even going to throw one cannon ball. We're going to turn your places to ruin by leaving them. And, you know, think of it this way. In 30 years from now, what does Shiloh's house look like? And what does Minnesota look like? I think I have an idea. I think I have a clue. I think Minnesota will look in ruins in 30 years from now. Literally indistinguishable from any of these abandoned big cities that have been so parasitized by welfare life that you can't live there anymore. Because the babies of the welfare queens eventually become criminal. They don't have opportunities and they can't do anything anyways. So we're talking about ruins down the line. And I'm pretty sure that in 30 years from now, Shiloh is a happy grandma, if not great grandma, you know? So I think victory is coming here, like solidly. And this videographer will not exist in 30 years from now. It's a question whether he still exists or whether he's in Africa right now just running fun scams. So I believe that victory will come, and it will come mostly on top of it. Not only because the punishment right now that Shiloh is being attributed is a couple of thousands of dollars fine and 200 hours in community work. Now, it's an unfair punishment. People were noting this very judge has been giving less to someone who has actually staged child porn. So Judge Krista Daly gave Thomas Mayer, who confessed to having thousands of sexual abuse images of children, 100 hours of community service and a class on why this type of porn is bad. She gave Shiloh Hendricks 200 hours and a $1,000 fine. So Shiloh, definitely her punishment is unfair, and it's truly the system saying we are anti-white. We will go after you harder for smaller offenses. We know that the system is that way we've known it for a decade, but they are truly, they're putting much more hours to just show that point. The Ape Man says, JF, it might just be time to accept that whites are going to go extinct in America. It's time to encourage large-scale race mixing, create an... Yeah, you know, the Ape Man, you have come constantly with trolling. And okay, go ahead and go race mix. But I'm going to block you from my channel. I don't want to hear you anymore. Create your multiracial empire, my friend. You have my green light. Go do whatever you like. I just don't want to hear you anymore. I am using here my First Amendment right not to hear you. I am using the First Amendment right of my ears, which allows me to withdraw from what is ultimately stupid commentary that you've been doing for a whole month. So bye-bye. That was your last contribution to this show. Richard Fitz says they are more worried about white people standing up for themselves. They are, absolutely. And that is why they are developing these laws in liberal states that are so malleable that you can actually have a white person and a brown person say and do the same thing, and the white person is going to end up in jail. That is the basis of the statutes being used in Shiloh Hendricks' case. So the disorderly conduct crime as defined in Minnesota. And someone asks a very clever question, Norman Lemming on X, in response to this, says, what about self-defense disorderly conduct? That's a very important point, because we typically think of self-defense as it's a physical assault that you do to protect yourself. But there is, I believe there is legitimately a point to be made for disorderly conduct self-defense. And the way I see it is this. if someone comes to you and is trying to step over your rights and is trying to claim that because you do not claim that right, you don't have it. If someone says, see, Jeff, I can step on your toes. See? And you can't say the N-word. See how you cannot say it? See? And he's starting to invade my bubble. He's not starting maybe to invade my bubble physically, but he's starting to invade my legal bubble because he's taunting me. And he's saying, and in the end, if I don't say the word, he's right. Then I believe there is such a thing as speech self-defense, where you're like, I wasn't about to say that word at all, but now that you're telling me I can't say it, I'm going to say it. Let's have a look at the statute. Disorderly conduct. Whoever does any of the following in a public or private place, including on a school bus, knowing or having reasonable grounds to know that it will or will tend to alarm, anger, or disturb others, or provoke an assault or breach of the peace, is guilty of disorderly conduct, which is a misdemeanor. So just pay attention to this. In a private place, and you believe that it will tend to alarm, anger, or disturb. How many people in Minnesota right now, tonight, will be alarmed, angered, or disturbed? Maybe a million, maybe a few millions. So you're telling me that there is between 1 and 3 million misdemeanor crimes being committed tonight in Minnesota, because tonight a million or more people are going to become angry following something that was said about someone. Or they will be disturbed. Maybe they will hear an interview on YouTube, and it will be in a private place. So yes, in a private place. That's crazy, Richard Fitz. It is. So they'll be in a private place. They'll be disturbed by what they hear. And therefore, the person who has spoken that disturbing thing or that angering thing will be guilty of disorderly conduct. And this is as part of, okay, engages in brawling or fighting. Number one, I might accept, you know, there is a component of a fight that actually disturbs the peace around you and makes people legitimately fearing violence. That would be one I do not contest. But here we get into number two. Disturbs an assembly or meeting not unlawful in its character. So let's push this. I mean, this was found actually unconstitutional by, I believe, the Minnesota Supreme Court. But disturbing an assembly. So imagine you're in a private place. So let's say there's a guy and a girl. They're dating. They're in a restaurant, maybe. They're on a private small table just to themselves. And a guy arrives and maybe he doesn't understand that the guy is dating the girl. And he says, oh, madame, you are very beautiful. Now that disturbs her because she was in a date with the other guy. And the other guy is also disturbed and angry. So as the guy just committed the crime of disorderly conduct, he caused anger and disturbance. It was reasonably tending. One could have expected this to cause anger and disturbance. And he has disturbed an assembly or a meeting. There was a meeting between two people and he disturbed it. My point is, by these standards, there are millions of misdemeanor crimes not being prosecuted tonight in Minnesota. And yet one is being prosecuted. The white lady who said something that the brown people don't like to hear. That one thing is what they will prosecute. So you find yourself, the anti-white system works that way. It creates a massive umbrella concept, but it never applies it to anyone else than white people. Do white people, by the way, have the privilege to choose what words are making them angry? Can we decide that the N-word makes us angry, therefore we don't want to hear black people say it in the park anymore? Because they are, right? They constantly are. So do we have this right? It makes us angry, disturbs us. And by the way, it genuinely disturbs us. Like, your regular normie white person is having an ache whenever they hear black people use the N-word. You have to really get used to it, to digest it and accept it. But for a normie, it's very hurtful. So it's angering them. Why aren't our rap musicians getting processed in the Minnesota courts? There must be some Minnesota rapper that has been using the word publicly at some point on video. Why aren't they getting processed? It's angering and disturbing to white people to hear this word. Richard Fitz says, yes, if you get called a slur as a white person, you don't get these proceedings starting for you. Only when you are on the side of the speaker. And then the third prong, which is what Shiloh Hendricks has been found guilty on, engages in offensive, obscene, abusive, boisterous, or noisy conduct, or in offensive, obscene, or abusive language, tending reasonably to arouse alarm, anger, or resentment in others. So that is a kind of circular comeback here, because up to now, what this statute was saying is, you have an intent of alarm and anger, but you are causing a physical, brawling, fighting-type disruption. That kind of worked, because the intent wasn't the crime. The crime was the fight itself and the disturbance that it causes. But with number three here, you're circling back to the intent. Because now, abusive language in and of itself, just causing alarm with language becomes the crime. It doesn't matter whether you've been engaging in obscene or boisterous or noisy conduct. You don't even have to be noisy because there's an or here. So you can forget the first part of that sentence. Use the or and consider just the end here. Abusive language tending reasonably to arouse alarm, anger, or resentment in others. So now you have a crime that is not defined in your action. You have a crime that is defined in the feeling of the other. And that is a no-no of Western civilization. It's exactly what the First Amendment was designed to address. Whatever others think from your word, whatever your words are causing in other people's feelings, that's their problem. It's not yours. So I believe we have good grounds here to bring Shiloh to the Supreme Court. I will personally be giving my money to help her campaign further. I don't know if she will just continue on the same Give, Send, Go page or if she will create an independent one for the appeal. But I believe this is so important that we get to the Supreme Court and that we basically shame places like Minnesota. Say, look, this judge right here, we're not going to let you do it even once. You go back to your little courtroom dealing with the liberals that you live amongst. But we're not going to let you do it once to our people. And in fact, we're going to evacuate your entire state after. And down the line, Minnesota will be in ruins. Pineapple Joe says, I think JF was unfair to Ape Man. I found some of his comments interesting and entertaining. No, but he's doing this kind of contrarian fake thing. And, you know, when I'm faced with fake, my reaction is always the same. Do it. Do it, and then I'll take you seriously. So this guy is saying, I want to create a multiracial... Do it. Do it. So you're going to go get your multiracial girlfriend. You're going to inseminate. You're going to have these multiracial babies. You do it. Tell me how great it is then in 100 years from now. I don't want to hear you before. I don't want to hear about you before that. I want results. I want results. And if you've been trolling on my chat for a month about contrarian, stupid, anonymous, that cannot even be proven, because it's like, okay, so this guy, who knows who he is? Is he going to live by his standard, or is he lying about it, or is he trolling about it? Do it and take pictures. And take picture of how it looks like at the end. And we'll see in 100 years. I'll see you in 100 years. I don't want to hear you until then. So that is what I had to say. The liar of Shiloh seemed very energized, was talking already about doing a Nepil. I'm very encouraged by the fact that we seem here to have a genuine liar who cares about her, who wants her to win, but who is faced with the stupid bureaucracy of liberal courts, which are absolutely insane. I've been through them. It's absolutely unfair. They are kangaroo courts. And that's why I can't live in liberal areas anymore, because they're really retarded. The judges are retarded. They're emotional. They want to destroy your life. They take any sort of legal objection as a proof that you are in bad faith. You're trying to slow down the process. It's like, well, yeah, I'm kind of trying to slow down the process of me being found guilty of something that is not illegal. Sorry.
During a trial by a judge are made during the trial. And then when you take a break, you make a record, right? You take a break, you make a record. I kept asking, if you're in there and you watch the trial, I kept asking, I need to make a record. I need to make a record. She'd get upset, run in the back. Get upset, run in the back. Your Honor, I need to make a record. It started piling up. All these objections started piling up. Your Honor, I need to make a record. I need to make a record. She'd run in the back. I'm like, Judge, we got to make a record. This is insane. This isn't law. This is a circus. This is...
Absolutely. making a record is quite important, because then you find yourself with appeals court, and if you haven't said objection, if you haven't interrupted the judge, then they tell you that you are not entitled to an appeal. So when you're faced with a judge who is constantly violating your rights throughout, it's always objection, objection, Your Honor. I need to make a record. I need to make a record. Because at some point with these liberal judges, you understand that they're not going to give you fair hearing. So it's really down to the appeals court. That is just what it is. And it's so sad that our civilization has been absolutely infected by these emotional judges that want one side to win. Plapidus says, we were lucky that Shiloh is attractive and a mother protecting her child. Both these optics angle are important or for legal success down the line. She represents beauty and fertility. Absolutely. That's why I think she is a golden case. You know, a lot of people, when I was backing her at the beginning of when the story came out initially, a lot of people were like, Jeff, is that good in optics terms? You know, she was kind of crass in the word that she used. I was like, no, that's excellent. We want the word to be as crass as possible to make a point about free speech. But the rest of her is absolutely admirable. I mean, down the line, she's still, after having all this give and go money, she's still heading her family with her husband. So absolutely, optics is 100. There's nothing to complain about. She has the right optics to go win this in the Supreme Court. And we also have the right justices in the Supreme Court right now to make a novel statement on free speech, which is, we're not going to let these local jurisdictions filled with liberals and government dependents tell free white people how to talk, period. We're not going to let it happen. Meanwhile, Elon Musk, you know, such a beginner, such an amateur, Elon Musk. I'm not racist. Musk slams snooty leftist interviewer. He says, I support the normal people. When you are faced with the liberal regime trying to extort a statement from you that you are not racist, don't give them. Don't give them. Let them hang. Let them wonder. What Elon is doing is so amateurish, it's actually taking us back many years. It's taking us back because down the line, this is why Shiloh is so much more important than Elon Musk. Now, Elon Musk has his importance because he bought Twitter and all, but down the line, in terms of pushing forward the rights of white people, Shiloh is more critical than Elon Musk because Elon Musk down the line can't stand by it. He can't stand by the full statement that white people are to be respected, that they deserve sovereignty, that they deserve control of their own life. Because we can't hear that one from Elon, we have to assume that he's not going to be with us at the end of it. Whereas Shiloh, no doubt, seems to be with us. And the only question is first whether our case would be accepted in the Supreme Court, because she's going to have to pass through years of appeal in Minnesota Court, Court of Appeals, then Supreme Court of Minnesota, then Supreme Court of the U.S. That's a process that would send us maybe 5 years down the line. But I hope that she does it. Not for her, because the 200 hours and $1,000 punishment, that's a punishment that is smaller, actually, than the quest that we are calling her for. It would be absolutely feasible for Shiloh to say, all right, I'm just going to do community service. I'm going to go serve soup in some Minnesota crappy place for homeless people and pay $1,000 and that's it. But I believe she has a bigger fight ahead of her. I believe it's like in the Lost episodes TV show where they say the island is not done with you, John. And Western civilization is not done with Shiloh. Shiloh has an opportunity here to pursue a just quest up to the highest points of the legal justice system of America just to make a beautiful point. And I would love it. I won't say that I want her to, or that she should, because that's a decision you have to take within yourself. But she has the support. She will have my money and your money. I'm sure there will be lots of enthusiasm if she can bring it to the Supreme Court. And I do hope that she takes that quest on her shoulder, that she carries that cross. Burned says, JF, please, I only have 9 months to know what to expect. I don't know what does that mean. You're gonna die in 9 months, so you want Shiloh to get to the Supreme Court in 9 months? That's unfeasible. So you're gonna have to accept dying without knowing what happens. Godadomar says, Shiloh of Troy, bravo JF, predict this goes viral. Well, Shiloh of Troy was actually from a tweet that I've quoted at the beginning. Foundering on his X account has said, Shiloh of Troy. And yeah, we are in a weird moment where Shiloh of Troy is actually more beautiful than the Ellen of Troy that we've been given. She's more beautiful than the Ellen of Troy that's produced by Hollywood. That is an interesting tension right here. It's very interesting. It's like Shiloh could have been cast in the Ellen of Troy role. That would have been a more beautiful movie. But we don't get this, of course. All right, so what else do we have before we close the show? Let's see, what are the news? death toll revised lower. Trump administration accused of playing politics with Iran war casualties. The U.S. administration and Department of War has just reduced the total number of American service members killed during the Iran war from 18 to 14. Okay. I see this as a detail, not too important. Plapides says Shiloh has Arwen energy from Lord of the Rings. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. People have pointed out that she has an elven quality to her, and I would agree. Yeah, she does. She does stand as a thin, blonde figure that's exactly like the elves. That's true. Lawyer for Andrew and Tristan Tate claims that the brothers are being held in solitary confinement and denied food. So that would be the state for the Tate brothers. I don't know exactly why they do this, but it seems that the Tate brothers have been put under unfair circumstances in the prison. And Clavicular has a commenting on Overton window maxing. So his strategic approach to, as a looks maxer, how should you approach politics? And he says, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't have said that I'm not political. I would have been as flexible as a leaf towards the political landscape. For your success, you need to pick out a few copes so you don't appear spineless. Pick something safe, like reducing taxes for small businesses, and stand on that opinion relentlessly. Well, that is... okay, I mean, I guess from a looks maxer perspective, where it doesn't really matter whether you're saying the truth, I guess that, yeah, I'm for the reduction of taxes for small businesses. I guess that sounds okay in a dating conversation. Doing this will ensure people open up to you in other ways as you're seen as a friendly ally. What you have done is psychologically weaponized politics. Use your mutual beliefs to insert yourself into people's personal lives. You could usually assume someone's hobbies based on their beliefs. For example, a leftist wouldn't go hunting with you, and a conservative wouldn't go to an art festival. Try to form connections with people based on this vulnerability and exploit once accomplished. Your boss will be less likely to deny you for a raise the next time you ask. You're more likable to your peers. I mean, that is a psychological manipulation of the kind I really don't engage much in, because I'm a guy of truth, and I'm ready to die with the truth. So I'm different than Clavicular. Probably too naive and too honest and too idealistic for this world. That's who I am. And that's how I like to live. But I understand the strategy. Okay, so you basically adopt some safe political talking points, and you just focus on them. And whenever people try to inspect your other sides of your politics, you go back to it. I guess it's a good strategy for being pleasant to others and forming alliances with stupid people. But I'm from a different category of males.